Jennifer. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to have that. Thank you for having me here.
Well, you know, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, and that is dreams. I have so many questions that remain unanswered, Jennifer. But before we get going with our interview, why don't you tell the folks in the viewing audience there how you got into liminal dreaming and the dreams research of dreams itself?
Well, I've always been a very vivid dreamer. In fact, a lot of my earliest memories are dreams. And I was my academic study is in myth and in religion. And so while I was studying those things, I became really interested in the different ways that people understand dreams, think about their dreams. And so both my subjective experience of really vivid dreaming and the objective experience of learning about them sort of spurred me into this work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a dream one time, and it never came true. So hopefully with your help tonight, you can make my dreams come true. Tell me how to do it.
That's the kind of dream, but okay.
Well, we better put some caveats on that. All right, so so exploring consciousness on the edge of sleep. That's so interesting. Is it possible that we can be asleep and dream and know that we're dreaming?
Absolutely. So I just wrote a book called Liminal Dreaming, and it's about the dream states between awake and asleep. So hypnagogia as you're falling asleep, hypnopompia as you're waking up. And in those, there's the book, and in those dream states, your conscious mind, your daytime mind remains online while you're actually having dream experiences. They're different from REM dreams. Mm-hmm. And so you are actually consciously aware of what's happening in unconscious dream space, different from lucid dreams, but you can, in fact, watch your own dreams.
Hmm. Is it possible that somebody could hack your dream?
So the people ask me that a lot. Partly from Inception. I think like an Inception kind of thing is absolutely possible. You know, you can talk to people who are in hypnagogia and they'll answer you. I mean, it's a non-linear conversation. You know, it's not like you and I are having a conversation because we both have waking mind. But if you're in hypnagogia and I ask you questions, a lot of times people will answer, and you can lead people through different kind of experiences in their dreams for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm. As we go, we have questions that are sent in through our chat moderators, and this one here is from Mr. Coffee Lover. He says, Jennifer, did the recent full moon affect your dreams?
The full moons are always really powerful for me and my dream life, actually. And on full moons, I often sleep with the curtains open, just so that I can have the experience of the, you know, sort of full moon kind of flooding through the room, and the way the moonlight moves around the room, it's totally beautiful. I mean, you know, we all our unconscious lives are in sync with so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think conscious dreaming, becoming aware of your dreaming, you'll start to notice things like whether the moon affects your dreams or the ocean or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always find that moonlight itself, if you're out there on especially a full moonlit night, that's almost a dreamy state right there, because the color and the shadows are so kind of dreamy, and you know, it's like it's not day, so it's almost like you're maybe another dimension almost. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's sure. I mean, nighttime is the realm of the dream. The moon, you know, the sun is the sun is daytime consciousness, and moon is nighttime, is the unconscious, you know. And here we are just the day after the summer solstice, when everything is very solar conscious and, you know, daytime mind, you know, as opposed to the dark time of year, which is the very dreamy time. You know, I mean, you know, the conscious and unconscious, we have a lot of associations with them. It's one of the reasons that I love liminal dream space so much, because it's actually one of the few times when the two really come together. When you have both conscious daytime mind and nighttime sleep mind simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Now, the moon, also known as lunar light, and lunars, where we got the word lunatic. But isn't it historically because the earlier people thought that people went insane when the moon came out?
Well, I mean, you know, of course, we don't entirely know what they were doing, although we can look at what indigenous populations are doing and maybe get a sense of what sort of prehistorical people were doing. But definitely with indigenous people, and also as far as we know with prehistorical people, dreams were very important. You know, for them, it was a very mystical experience, a very meaningful experience, something that you maybe would talk to everybody in your tribe about your dreams, mm-hmm. or you might even interact with other people based on what happened in your dreams. I mean, there are some communities now that do that. You know, the Sonoy do it, or South American tribes. You know, any number of peoples who think that what I mean, we in our culture, which is so dominated by the daytime solar Apollonian reasoning mind, we tend to really discount things like dreams and imagination, right? Oh, that was just a dream, or you only imagined that. Like, we don't really take into account as much the nighttime Dionysian unconscious, you know, lunar mode. And if you look at other peoples, you really can see how people value these things differently. And I think it would do our culture so much good if we actually started to think more about our dream experiences, conscious mm-hmm. dreaming, what's happening when you're in those realms.
Well, it seems like our culture's kind of put dreams in a silly box, you know, just it doesn't really mean anything. It's just neurons and just bits and pieces cobbled together, and they have no meaning. But they also, those type of people also tend to believe that there's nothing else except for the organic existence. But I can tell you, I've been doing this program since 2004, and the hundreds and hundreds of people that I've talked to, I'm thoroughly convinced there's more to what we see out there, whether multi-dimensions or parallel universes or afterlife. There's, you know, there's interactions, there's thin places, there are a lot of things going on. Of course, it doesn't benefit knowing that, or even looking at it, doesn't benefit the system. So the system says, well, why we look at dreams, let's look at getting that 30-year mortgage instead, you know. And so, I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe we need to pull back away from that, because that's more like a nightmare.
I agree with you. And it's, so our culture that is so materialistic and based on, you know, it's only believable if you can see it, touch it, whatever it is, right? And I think that dream space is really a place where people can start to move into thinking about the world differently, right? Because everybody dreams. Every single person who has ever lived has these incredible, mystical, psychedelic, nonlinear, whatever it is, experiences that that kind of shake that forward premise of the material world. And I think that's, you know, I think it's a let's call it a gateway a gateway experience for people who are really stuck in mm-hmm. the materialistic daytime mind world, and who want to try to get to different kinds of experiences. Mm-hmm. And since everybody dreams, it's a wonderful opportunity to go and explore consciousness. You know, mm-hmm. humans are hardwired to play with mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Stack Stevenson out of our YouTube chat says, Jennifer, when dreaming that you're floating, is there a meaning behind that?
You know, I'm not sure about the meaning, but certainly it's those kinds of experiences actually often are liminal dream experiences. So when your arm jerks or your leg jerks, or when you have a feeling of falling or a feeling of floating, often that's happening as you're falling asleep, usually, so hypnagogia. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of it's a very tactile experience, right? And sensorily, it's very, very rich. There's taste and there's smell, a feeling of floating, feeling of something really soft. So usually that means that you're in a hypnagogic dream.
I have a particular dream, a recurring theme type dream, and I'm going down a hill, and I can't tell. And many times I'm not in a car, but I'm going down a hill, sitting as if I'm in a car, and I always seem to be heading toward water. And it's like it's a massive amount of water. It's a flood, and it's flooded the road. And sometimes I go in the water, sometimes I go on top of the water. I must have had that dream, I don't know, 50 times. Your bio doesn't say you're a dream interpreter, but what can I do with that?
Well, so, okay, can you breathe when you go in the water out of curiosity? Can you breathe underwater when you go in?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, I never drown.
Yeah, I have those experiences a lot as well. You know, so I don't tend to interpret dreams, partly because of what we were just talking about. People really only think about dreams as relevant to the daytime mind, right? To like the waking, forward-thinking, materialistic mindset, right? And so interpretation is more of that, right? It's as if, you know, the experiences that you have when you're dreaming are only relevant to the experiences that you have when you're not dreaming, right? Which is like saying something like the experiences that you have when you're eating are only relevant to the experiences that you have when you're driving or something. You can have a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of ways to work with recurrent dreams. So one of the things that I do with recurrent dreams is I try to bring them kind of across the boundary into waking experience, interdimensional smuggling experience. And so, you know, maybe try going to like a water and thinking about dreams, like, you know, let that dream seep through you and see what happens when you try it with a different mindset.
Yeah, in fact, I see Azur out of the YouTube chat kind of followed that up. Said, why do people have recurring dreams in general? Now, did you just answer that question?
No, people definitely have recurrent dreams, and why, I don't know, but they're both cultural and personal, right? So the dreams that we have in the Western Hemisphere, for example, like a really common dream you'll find that people in the U.S. and Canada have, that dream where you never finished high school or college and you have to go back and take another class. Or a dream where you're driving a vehicle or conducting some kind of vehicle and you can't do it, or you're in the back seat, or a dream where you're trying to catch a flight and and you keep getting lost or whatever. In the East, people have a lot of dreams about trying to find a toilet and not being able to, or having an experience of needing a toilet in a very public situation. So there's cultural recurrent dreams, and then there's also really personal that we have, where people will go back to the same settings. I have 5 or 6 different dream places that I've been revisiting really my whole life since I was a child. And most of those are welcomes of places where I've lived, because I've lived all over the world. But when I'm in the dream, I know where they are, and I can kind of map the spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of times, places from your youth or experiences from your youth, when your mind is really forming, tend to show up more often in your dream experiences. I don't know, maybe it's because you have some attraction to that space. Maybe something happened at a certain point in your life that really imprinted. Maybe your dream self is yearning for some particular setting or experience. Nobody really knows why we have them, but they're both personal and cultural.
For those of you just joining the broadcast tonight, we have on our Skype line Jennifer Dumpert talking about liminal dreaming. Jennifer got this question from Joey Splats out of the YouTube chat. It says, how can we intentionally have lucid dreams?
So that's a great question. So lucid dreams are happening So they happen more in the middle of the night, not in the hippocampia. And there, what happens in a lucid dream is that your waking self, so the you and I that we are right now, becomes aware in the dream space, and you're able to control the dream to a certain degree. So flying is often the first thing people do when they become lucid in dreams. Mm-hmm. And you can teach yourself to dream, whereas everybody is a natural liminal dreamer. Some people are natural lucid dreamers. Most of us have to work at it. But there are a lot of tricks. I do have a few in my book, but I'll teach you one really good, easy one. So if you want to learn lucid dreaming, what you want to do is you want to do that early so that it comes to your mind automatically. So people will often say, like, look at your hands or carry some particular token. My favorite exercise is to look at something, look away, look back, look away, and look back a third time. So just do it all the time when you're awake. Just, you know, try that exercise and do it so much that it becomes ingrained. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is in the dream space, the third time you look back at it, it will be different. And you'll realize that you're dreaming, and then you'll become lucid. And then you have to try to stay calm, because most people wake themselves up because they get so excited. And then once you've achieved lucidity, then you can, I mean, then you are driving the dream world. And it is an amazing experience.
Wow. Driving the dream world. That's a new concept for me. Tell you what, Jennifer, the other night I had a dream, and I was listening to the Beatles, and I tried to turn it off. Now, I like listening to Beatles, so I don't know why I would, but I guess I wanted to sleep in my dream. So I'm dreaming, and I'm trying to turn the radio off, turn it off, and come back on, turn it off, come back on, turn it off, come back on. And I couldn't turn it off. And then I woke up and realized that I had my headbuds on, and I was listening to the Beatles. So,
but it is amazing what, you know, we actually, of all of the senses, most of them get turned off when we're dreaming. We act out our dreams, right? So chemicals like acetylcholine come in and they paralyze us so that you can't talk, you can't move, right? But the two senses that never get turned off are your sense of smell and your sense of hearing. So you can actually hear just as well when you're asleep and dreaming as you can when you're awake. Now, how you interpret it is obviously going to be quite different. So working with sense and sound are very powerful ways to work with dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Onerogens. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Questions just flying in here. Azure from the YouTube chat. I had dreams as a child where me and my brother were hiding from King Kong. No BS. Why?
I had a recurrent dream when I was a kid of being, I was with Scooby-Doo, and we were in a haunted house, and we were being chased, a framed painting in a Sherlock Holmes hat. And it was a terrifying dream. I mean, what a strange monster, a framed painting in a Sherlock Holmes hat. Maybe King Kong was something that you saw particularly when you were a kid that scared the Jesus out of you, or maybe you have some particular associations with it. Again, maybe your dream self has some relationship to King Kong. It's hard to know.
Hmm. All right. Peter from Australia says, Jennifer, how can someone improve their ability to recall dreams?
Yeah, that's a great question. Whatever it is you pay attention to is what you're going to get better at. Doesn't matter what it is, you know, whether it's playing the piano or cooking or being nice to your children, it doesn't matter. Whatever you pay attention to is whatever you're going to get better at. So better dream recall is paying attention to it. So dream journals, or find a friend who you can tell dreams to, or lie in bed and think about them. But there's a great liminal dream practice for recalling dreams. So hypnopompia, which is the liminal dream state as you're waking up, if you can wake up very, very, very slowly and keep yourself in hypnopompia, because normally you come from REM into hypnopompia. If you can keep yourself very still in hypnopompia and try to settle back down, often you'll recall the dreams that you were just having.
Very, very good, very good. I think everybody wants to recall their dreams. I can't stand it when I just had a great dream and then it just evaporated. So, all right.
Another good trick is actually a voice-activated recorder. So you can buy an app for your phone for $3, $5, mm-hmm. and they're recorders, but that are voice-activated. So they'll only start recording when you start making noise. So you can flex to you, and then you can just start talking as soon as you start becoming awake. So often even just reaching for pen and paper is enough to chase away the dreams.
Now, that's it, too, because I remember, because we've had other people on, and they say, write your dream down. Well, by the time I'm looking for paper and pen, man, then forgot it. So that is just not going to work. It's not going to work for me. I like the idea of the app. A question from YouTube says, do you know what sleep paralysis is?
Absolutely. And there's a chapter about it in my book. Sleep paralysis is mostly a liminal dream experience, and what happens, and again, it's an experience that most of us have at least once or twice in our lives, and that something like 4 to 6% of the population has often. And what happens is you're paralyzed, so you can't move. Often there's some sort of malevolent presence in the room with you. So in our culture, it's an incubus or a succubus. Every culture has an explanation for it, whether it's a ghost, you know, in Asian cultures, or the night marchers, or unappeased ancestors, or there's a goblin, an Italian goblin. So every culture has a story about what it is. So subjectively, most cultures, you know, will have a story about these kind of invaders, nighttime invaders. Objectively, the scientists would say that those chemicals that paralyze you, that I mentioned earlier, your waking mind comes online before those chemicals have worn off, or you have something called REM breakthrough. If you are somebody who has regular sleep paralysis, the best way to work with it is, there's a series of exercises in the book. There's about 20 exercises for working with dreams, and I have one for sleep paralysis. And the best thing to do is actually counterintuitively to try to bring on the experience yourself so that you're in charge of it.
It looks like a couple of people have expressed dreams that they had where they had to go to the bathroom in their dream, and then I guess they woke up and went to the bathroom. So is it our dreams telling us it's time?
Sometimes, for sure. I mean, there are some obvious body things, you know, that you know break through in the dream. You know, if you have to use a bathroom, for example, or if you're extremely hungry, sometimes you'll be like trying to eat in a dream. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of you know, your body is talking to you. So not only, you know, there are things that are really obvious, like those, you know, immediate physical needs. But then there are also, I mean, one of the reasons that people figure things out in dreams is because I think that your daytime ego gets out of the way, and things that you already know in your unconscious actually are allowed to kind of come to the fore. You know, people have, you know, Kekulé figured out what the structure of the benzene ring in a liminal dream. The periodic table was in a liminal dream. So there's a lot, you can hear a lot that your own body and mind is telling you if you learn to listen.
Gladys Kravitz out of the YouTube chat says, Jennifer, I've always dreamed about an old spooky house that had rooms containing an evil presence that I'm fighting. What is that from?
That's okay. That's a really, that's not an uncommon experience. a lot of people have things like that, and I know that it's scary as sin. I mean, it's really frightening when those things happen. And so again, one of the ways to work with those things is to try to have it manifested in your daytime world. Like try to use your imagination to create these creatures and see if you can have a dialogue with them. See if you can say, okay, what is it? You know, what do you want from me? What are you trying to get from me? Why are we trying to fight? Mm-hmm. Where's the war? You know, see if you can bring those creatures into your daytime experience so that you learn to deal with them better mm-hmm. when you face them in the dream.
Jennifer, there is the phenomena though, and I've heard many times people say that they had a dream about somebody they hadn't seen for years, and the next day a phone rings and it's them. Is that a premonition? Is that a dream? Is that a connection in the astral realm? What's going on there?
It's a good question. I don't have any answers for you. I've had that experience myself. I had an experience, in the 1980s, before there was cell phones or the web. I was young, and I was backpacking around Europe, and I fell asleep on the lawn at Hyde Park, and my cat, who was still in the United States, with my parents, came to me in the dream and said, "Look, I'm dying. I wanted to come and say goodbye to you, before I died." And in fact, the cat died, over there on the other side of the world. And I had no way of knowing. And I was gone for 8 mm-hmm. months. Mm-hmm. So I had no way of knowing that the cat mm-hmm. had died. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of experiences, obviously, that we can't explain. Mm-hmm. And I don't pretend to have the answers. But again, it's one of the reasons that I really love exploring in dream space, especially in liminal dream space when you still have conscious mind online, because you have access to these kinds of weird worlds. Like mm-hmm. Bob Monroe from the Robert Monroe Institute, the guy who coined the phrase out-of-body experience, said that that hypnagogia, the liminal dream space of hypnagogia, was the space that you wanted to access if you were trying to get an out-of-body experience, because mm-hmm. in lots of indigenous cultures, the shaman is in liminal dream space. That's where the shaman is traveling into other worlds, because it's a liminal experience. It's mm-hmm. necessarily in between here and there, neither here nor there, and both here and there, mm-hmm. And so it's different. It's different reasoning. It's different world.
Is it possible that dreams are really coming from an external source, perhaps maybe coming through the pineal gland, coming from the outside in any way? Or do you think they're all manufactured or created within?
It's a very good question, and something that a lot of people debate. Something as simple as Jung saying that some of our dreams are our own, and some of our dreams are from our tribe or from our larger culture, right? That the dreams aren't just our own, because our unconscious mm-hmm. is not just our own. Some people are trying to meet in dream realms, and think that they're, legitimately other places where you can travel. I tend to be more interested in the questions than in the answers. I like the questions, and I like exploring the questions, and I'm not sure that I would say that I feel like mm-hmm. I can answer them, but I do like exploring them.
Well, of course, that's what this program's all about, exploring these questions. Here's a question. It says, why are some of my dreams black and white and others in color? It's from Chris Wilson.
Oh, that's a good one. I've known other people who dream in black and white. Not many. It's an unusual one, Chris. I have known people who are never actually themselves in the dream. They're always either somebody else or they're looking at the dream from a third-person perspective, both of which are experiences I sometimes have. That does happen sometimes, but it is an unusual one. And I'm not sure about that one.
Okay.
I've had experiences in dreams where I've been several different people at once. It's weird.
Well, Okay. Here's a question from this looks like it comes from YouTube. If you dream, you actually are looking down at yourself in action, does it mean we are subconsciously in a fifth dimension at that time?
Well, again, you're going back to, like, for example, you know, Bob Monroe and out of body experiences, or lucid dream experiences. There's a very famous lucid dreamer named Van Eeden, Dutch guy, who wrote down, who was a natural lucid dreamer, who would do things like if he was lying on his back asleep in the lucid dream, he would go above his body and then he would come back down into it, but lying down with his dream body lying face down inside his physical body, which was lying face up, and then would slowly wake up for the sensation of flipping over.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, I think a lot of different states, out of body mm-hmm. or lucid dreams, there's a lot of different experiences that you can have where you're actually above yourself and watching what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you can do cool, weird things with it.
Now, this is a very deep philosophical question, appropriately from Dreamwalker. It says, Jennifer, what does the song "Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, 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 life is but a dream"? What's the meaning?
Okay, I love that one. And actually, I've heard people really philosophically break apart that song. So I have lots of answers for that one. But since we were just talking about lucid dreaming, the most traditional lucid dreamers are the Tibetan Buddhists. They have lucid dreaming as part of their practice, and they're learning to become lucid in dreams for a lot of reasons. One of which is learning to meditate in dreams, but another is that, so we say, well, dreams aren't real, and what they say is, you know, waking life is just as unreal as the dream world. So in the dream, if you learn to become conscious and maneuver in the dream world, realizing the unreality of it, then you can bring that mm-hmm. into the waking world, and you can learn about the unreality mm. of the waking world.
Mm. Interesting. There's a biblical text that says the things that are not seen are more real than the things that do. So, Jennifer, how do we know that while we're talking, or we're working, or we're walking and flying, that we're not in the dream now, and our real life is in the dream?
Yeah, you know, that's the old Taoist. I dreamed I was a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming that I'm a man? Mm. You know, I mean, and so a lot of my practices with dreams, so liminal dreaming again, or when I've been talking about a way of working with dreams, is bringing the dream into the waking world, is I really like breaking down the boundaries between dream and waking. I really love to, to try to bring the dream into the waking world, to try to bring mm-hmm. the waking world into the dream, to linger in the spaces that mm-hmm. are both dreaming and waking at the same time, and to sort of break down this, you know, we think of things as so on, off, black, white, you know, we're awake and we're mm-hmm. asleep, and in fact, there's a huge continuity of consciousness. There's a great spectrum of experience between the two.
Mm. All right, then we have this question here. This is from Don Morgan out of YouTube. So, Jennifer, what if you don't dream, but you just have premonitions, deja vu?
So, again, I have a lot of answers to that question. For people who don't remember nighttime dreams, hypnagogia is a great practice. It's a great way of going in and exploring your dream world. Again, I have exercises in the book for learning to do that. If you're somebody who's having a lot of premonitions and having a lot of those experiences, you're probably somebody who's really, you're a great candidate to explore the liminal dream space. Try going, specifically just do it when you're napping during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you already have those experiences, then I think hypnagogia would be a really, mm-hmm. really rich place for you.
Yeah. I mentioned biblical text earlier. There's another one where it says that in the last days, God's going to pour out his spirit. If it says, your sons and daughters will prophesy, your young men will see visions, and your old men will dream dreams. That seems to me that there's a almost a created part to the human experience, that dreams are much more important than we think that they are.
For sure. And so there's something called oneiromancy, which is a form of divination through dreams. And most other cultures, I mean, you know, again, not us modern Western people, most other cultures actually have various practices of oneiromancy, of some sort of divination through dream, whether it's, you know, that you're traveling to the realm of the spirits or the realms of the ancestors, whether it's shamanic journeys into other realms, whether it's, you know, premonition, whatever. Most cultures do have practices of oneiromancy. You know, so we're actually the weird ones, you know, in that most of us don't buy that, but most people have.
Mm-hmm. Out of the YouTube chat says, Jennifer, what's your thoughts on astral projection? Is that simply the next step to lucid dreaming?
I think that they're different experiences. And I think that, I mean, for sure, I think that you can, if you're somebody who is exploring in these realms, then I think it would not be surprising that you would have both. But the practices toward them do tend to be a little different. Again, hypnagogia is often the jumping off point. A lot like the Tibetan Buddhists go into lucid dreaming first by learning to manipulate hypnagogia. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of out-of-body experiences, people go there first through learning to, you know, consciously practice hypnagogia. But I think they're slightly different, but definitely an overlap. It depends on where you think you're traveling.
Mm-hmm. All right. Floor worker out of the YouTube chat says, I never lose a fight in my dreams. Jennifer, do you lose fights in your dreams? And I don't know that I ever had a fight. I guess I probably have. Have you had a fight dream, and do you win?
Well, okay, so this is really interesting, and I just had an experience earlier this week where I was in an inescapably bad situation in the dream, and it was, you know, I had used all my dream mojo to kind of get out of it, and I clearly wasn't going to get out of it, and I became lucid in the dream, and then therefore was able to change it. As I have become a much more conscious dreamer, I almost never actually have bad dreams anymore. If they start to go bad, I have enough, even if I'm not lucid, I have enough consciousness in the dream that where I can usually turn things around. Mm-hmm. So part of, you know, and they, you know, they've worked with, they've worked with people with PTSD, teaching them dreaming, teaching them conscious dreaming, teaching them lucid dreaming, like soldiers coming back from war. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of different programs that are teaching these people about dream work as a way of dealing with these experiences of fear. And so if the more of a conscious dreamer you are, I think the more you're likely to win your fights.
Mm-hmm. All right. Back to Dreamwalker out of one of the chats here. It says, Jennifer, are we living multiple lives in multiple dimensions simultaneously? And when we dream, are we living out one of those lives?
Well, I mean, that is, you know, there are some scientists who say that there are, you know, many different dimensions happening at once. I mean, even the scientists are sort of talking about what these, you know, about these kind of overlapping realms. That could be an experience of what's happening. Like I say, I love the question. I can't pretend that I have an answer. It's a deep question.
Now, yeah. Have you ever had a dream that you would consider a warning, and then in the awake state, that situation came up, and your dream was apropos to the situation, and you changed what you were going to do?
Yeah. By the way, quantum mechanics was the phrase I was just trying to think of when the guy was talking about the different realities that are happening at once. Mm-hmm. That's what people who are studying quantum mechanics say. Mm-hmm. Have I ever had that experience? I haven't, but I know plenty of people who have. And, you know, one of, you know, there, nobody really knows why we dream, but there's this Finnish guy, Ren Venuso, forgive me, Finnish guy, if I'm saying your name wrong, who says that dreams are actually ways of threat simulation. They're ways of working through all the different things that might happen. Look, I think that the, as I said earlier, I think that we know way more than we know we know. You know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of knowledge there in the unconscious. You know, one of the reasons that all these, you know, experiments, you know, things have been figured out in dreams. And if we get our forward mind out of the way and learn to listen to what we already know, then I think that there's a lot of answers. So, I mean, it would not at all be surprising to me that your unconscious would say, hey, you know, Bozo, don't, you know, or whatever, hey, you know, stop doing this or start doing that, or, you know, don't take the highway today.
Today's society, of course, we all have our cell phones right next to us. There it is. Cell phones, internet, television, newspapers, information, events are coming at us such a rapid pace. Doesn't all this technology and all this information, isn't it pushing us further away from a sort of a spiritual realization of what life, the bigger things of life, and maybe up into and including more accessing of dreams? Aren't those like the antithesis of that? They're blockers, would you say?
Yeah, totally. And one of the scariest things about the current world technology is how much it has its tendrils in your attention. You know, I mean, the online world really wants to sell you stuff, basically. And they've learned to get very, very, very far into our experience in order to sell us things, you know. And so, you know, what the experiences that you're going to be having, what, you know, it anticipates, you know, what you're going to want by what you've wanted before, or, you know, all the algorithms, you know. And again I have a section about this in my book. One of the reasons that I love liminal dream spaces, hypnagogia and hypnopompia, even though we all go through them every day, even though everybody is a natural liminal dreamer, for some reason it hasn't been written about. So right now there isn't anything that's trying to sell you something in your hypnagogic experience. There are plenty of things trying to sell you things for your lucid dream experiences, but not, except for my book. You know, but, you know, other than that, there's really nothing out there. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's actually a really psychic free space. Liminal dream space. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the few frontiers of it's a frontier of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So many questions coming in. Let's get a few more of them. Scotty out of YouTube. It says, Jennifer, do you perform astral projection? And if so, do you ever encounter evil spirits?
So I don't myself, but I've ended up learning a lot about it because a certain percentage of people who come to my classes or my workshops come because they are trying to learn how to astral project. They're trying to learn out-of-body experiences and becoming well-practiced, learning to locate and linger in liminal dream, especially in hypnagogia, is the space where you go to have those experiences. And so I end up, I taught people how to do it, but myself, it isn't really where I go. But, you know, of course, I mean, yeah, that happens to people in astral, who astral project, or like shamans. Shamans are always hitting each other with poison darts, you know, in the spiritual realms. There's a lot of battle that goes on in these places.
Overbill Automotive out of the YouTube chat says, I've had this dream three times, talking with my mother outside, looking at mountains, and two jet fighters fly over, then light flashes. Wow.
That's really specific.
Mm-hmm.
That's really specific. Gosh, I'd love to know more about that. Like, mm-hmm. does it seem like there's meaning? Is the light like a message? Is your mother still alive? I mean, that's a very specific recurrent dream.
All right, and then we have this here from Gladys again. What sleep stage was Edgar Cayce considered to be when he prophesied?
Probably in a liminal dream space. And I actually have a practice of automatic writing. So, you know, Cayce being one of the people who was, people who are channeling, it goes back to like John Dee and the Enochian mm-hmm. angels, John Dee being the wizard to, you know, Elizabeth I in Shakespearean times, the prototypical wizard with the stars and the moon on his flowing robes. And also the surrealists and the Dadaists were using a form of automatic writing, although for them it was just consciousness or language kind of coming through. And what I do is I get myself into hypnagogia with my laptop sitting on my lap. I can touch type. And when I'm actually in the hypnagogia, I can actually type. And I type out what's happening in the hypnagogic space. Mm-hmm. So it is a kind of a form of, you know, speaking from beyond, from the dream realm, and seeing what comes up.
Mm-hmm. There's another talk about outer body experiences in the Bible. The Apostle Paul had a revelation. Said, "I knew a man in Christ, and whether in the body, I cannot tell, or whether out of the body, I cannot tell. Such a one was caught up in the third heaven." Sounds to me that Paul had an outer body experience.
Yeah, Paul may have. You know, I mean, I know the saying, like, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But since I've been doing this work with liminal dreaming in the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, and I used to work more with lucid dreaming and with Onerogens, but I've really been really involved in this liminal dreaming and seeing how much amazing experience there is in our history with people who have been in these mind states, mm-hmm. because they're so extraordinary, they're so strange, they're so unlike other dreams, mm-hmm. they're so unlike any other experience that we have, mm-hmm. these sort of swirling, non-narrative, free associative spaces, mm-hmm. that are both waking and sleeping, both dreaming and conscious mind. I mean, it's such an extraordinary experience, and it, you know, once you learn to recognize it, you see how often it comes up in history.
Mm-hmm. Now, when Martin Luther King said, "I have a dream," he really wasn't saying he had a dream per se. He's more like saying, "I had a wish," right?
I had a wish.
A
sure.
wish, yeah. I don't think he got the dream.
You know, dream is, of course, a word that gets used in many contexts for us, which partly speaks to the nature of, you know, we don't really know what to make of it.
Mm-hmm. Peter from Australia, back with this question. Is it possible for someone to die in their sleep if they dream of falling out of building, etc.?
You know, I remember when I was a kid on the playground, people used to say if you died in your dream, you would actually die. But I've died in dreams lots. I mean, I've okay. died in dreams and come back to shoo the flies away from my rotting body, you know. I mean, I've died in dreams and, you know, tried to, you know, comfort my grieving family. I've died in dreams and, you know, stood looking over my dead body and then gone up into, you know, a spaceship. I mean, I've died in dreams lots. Mm. It's clearly quite possible.
Mm-hmm. This is from one and one in YouTube. Jennifer, why is it that sometimes we see ourselves participating in a dream from a distance and sometimes we are the eyeballs or the camera, so to speak?
So there's, and I have that experience a lot. I've had experiences of even being not only not me, but two other different people who are like having a conversation or something along those lines. The scientists have an explanation for it. The scientists talk about the part of the brain that has self-awareness. And when we are sleeping, that part of the brain gets turned off. We can kind of come and go from it. So they would say that we're having experience, but the part of the brain where we associate an experience with ourselves, mm-hmm. isn't online. But you know, I mean, I like scientist explanations because they give us some objective, but I don't think that they're usually the whole answer.
Yeah. In the movie Secret Window with Johnny Depp, you ever seen that movie?
No.
He's laying on the couch and he has a dream, and in the dream he is falling off a cliff. He's falling. It seemed like it takes forever. Then he wakes up and he falls off the couch. So the whole time he was falling off the couch, but it seemed much longer in his dream. So it tells me there was a time slip there.
During the 80s, there's this guy named Stephen LaBerge who did a lot of experiments with lucid dreaming. He's a natural lucid dreamer, and he, through Stanford, he was doing his doctoral work at Stanford, and he got a bunch of other natural lucid dreamers, and he hooked them up to a bunch of equipment, and then he had a pre-agreed upon. So in the lucid dream, they would signal that they had become lucid in a dream by moving their eyes left, right, mm-hmm. and then they would do a series of actions. So for example, count from 1 to 10, and then when they were done, in order, and then when they were done, they would go left, right. So in fact, the people in the REM dream were able to communicate with the scientists who were watching them, and amongst other things. They discovered that time does not, unsurprisingly, is not necessarily the same in a dream. So if you're counting from 1 to 10 in a dream, it might actually happen in moments, or it might take a lot longer. Time in dreams does not run on the same track as waking time. I mean, that's not really a surprise to anybody, but now it's been scientifically proven.
Okay, question from Dream Runner. Are people in a vegetable state a body without a spirit or soul?
Oh, that's a really tough question. You know, I mean, people have come back from being in comas and, you know, talked about having experiences, you know, and a whole range of things, from being completely aware of who was in the room and what they were saying to, you know, I was in some completely other realm having some very... some very, you know, kind of mystical experience. You know, I do think that, however, that death, you know, I had, and again, I write about this in the book, a couple years ago, my aunt, to whom I was extremely close, died. And so I did deathbed, you know, I spent a couple months, you know, I was sitting by her deathbed, and after she had lost waking consciousness and could no longer have waking conversations, she started to talk, and I realized, because I have a lot of practice talking to people in hypnagogia, that she was actually in hypnagogia, and I could talk to her, as I was saying earlier, and she would answer. I mean, it wasn't a linear conversation, but and then I later learned that the hospice in which she died is run by this guy named Dr. Christopher Kerr, who is just actually finishing a book, which is about the fact that dying people naturally go through hypnagogia. So the space between, the liminal space between life and death, is, for many people anyway, a liminal dream experience. So, I mean, that's a very long answer, and I think it depends on how far gone they are. Mm-hmm.
A viewer writes in this question, says, I've heard that extroverts see themselves in dreams and introverts are like looking through their own eyes. Anything to that?
Huh. I've never heard that one. Now, I am an extrovert through and through, and I have both experiences. I've never heard that one. I'm going to look that up. Because maybe I have more experiences of seeing myself in the third person, because I definitely does happen. And I have plenty of dreams where I'm back and forth between inside the dreamer and watching the dreamer.
Got this question. This is actually from our moderator, Jade. She asked, what is the difference between a dream and a vision, and how would you know the difference?
Well, you wouldn't necessarily. Dreams happen when you're asleep or else between awake and asleep, and that's the rub. Because between awake and asleep, you can have, I mean, I definitely have had experiences that I would call visionary, I mean, it kind of depends on how you're defining a vision. You know, I mean, when people talk about, you know, like biblically, for example, you know, visions of the heavens, when people are talking about those, they're usually talking about experiences they had when they were awake. But the liminal dream space, when you're both awake and asleep, is, I mean, it is the realm of the visionary. And that's one of the things that I talk about a bunch in the book. You know, I mean, it's one of the reasons that it's a great place to access your own creativity and your own, you know, like sort of spiritual growth, because the experience is so visionary. So it's a question on the edge. It's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Back to Floor Worker out of YouTube. And I think you may have answered this question, but maybe we need to go over it again. Have you learned to control your dreams?
Controlling your dreams is a lucid dream phenomenon. And I used to have a quite an active lucid dream practice. I studied with Stephen LaBerge, and with Norbu Rinpoche, Tibetan Buddhist dream yoga master. And, you know, for a while I was really into it. But I'm actually much more interested in the liminal dreams. And liminal dreams, even though you are conscious in them, you can't really control them. They're too fast moving. They tend to be kind of non-narrative. You often aren't in them. It's just an unfolding moment of free associative swirling memories and thoughts and images and whatever it is. Right. And so there it's a very wild ride. It's a very amazing and intense space. And it really is pretty hard to control. Now, I can control myself to the extent, like I was talking about, I can type through it. I can talk through it. I can sometimes try to have sensations, like try to taste something. But it's different from controlling what's happening in the dream. I can control myself because I'm partly conscious. But that's a slightly different experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that you've heard about hypnagogia, when you're falling asleep, those hallucinatory dreams that you have, maybe your arm jerks or your leg jerks, or now that you've heard about this and you're like, oh, wait, that's a thing, you're going to have the experience because everybody has it naturally. And teaching people to do it is as easy as just saying, hey, pay attention to it when mm-hmm. you're falling asleep. And now everybody's going to have that experience. And it'll give you the opportunity to be like, oh, that's what that lady was talking about. This is weird.
All right. This question came in from YouTube. Is it abnormal not to dream at all?
Well, you are, in fact, dreaming, but you don't remember them. And it's, in fact, extremely normal. So we have something called circadian rhythms. Everything that's living has a relationship to the sun, right? And so we have energy, we have kind of 24-hour energy patterns. But some people's are a little less and some people are a little bit more. And it's inherited. You inherit your circadian rhythm and it amounts to your chronotype. So some people are owls and some people are larks, right? So if you are the last person up at the party, if you can work, when you start working, you're not as good, but the longer you work, the better you get. If you wake up really slowly and kind of confused, you're an owl chronotype. But if you're the opposite, if you wake up immediately and you, as soon as you wake up, bing, my husband is this, you know, you're totally awake. You hop right out of bed. As soon as you start working, you're freshest, you're best, then you're actually going to have a hard time remembering your dreams. Because as soon as you wake up, bing, you're really awake. And that's really at least a third of the population. Mm-hmm. Again, liminal, if you're interested in exploring dream space, hypnagogia is the, if that's you, then hypnagogia is the dream space where you will have and remember dreams. So like napping, taking a 15-minute nap in the afternoon, or even just paying attention as you fall asleep, you'll start to realize that you have hypnagogic dreams. Mm-hmm. And those you can learn to remember. Again, the book has a lot of lessons for that. So it's completely normal. It's probably your inherited circadian rhythm.
I think it was a Nebuchadnezzar that had a dream about a hand writing on a wall, and he went across the land and he called his magicians and his soothsayers and everybody to try to interpret that dream. And I think it was Daniel that was able to do it. And of course, that's where we get that maxim, the handwriting is on the wall, from that right there out of the Bible. But he interpreted the dream, and the king was pretty happy about that. So is it possible that when we have a dream, that somebody out there might have the interpretation? We just got to find them?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and there's plenty. Actually, dream interpretation, you know, which is very key in a lot of therapeutic methods, for example. I mean, many therapists want you to bring in your dreams because it's what's bubbling up from your unconscious, without the lockdown of the forward-thinking ego. And I mean, I think that you can learn a lot about yourself with dream interpretation. I mean, it's not what I do specifically, but I think it's extremely useful. And there's a lot, I mean, those dream diaries that have like, you know, your teeth falling out always means this, or a key always means this. I think those are too simplistic, but I think there are a lot of methods for interpreting dreams that are really good and really useful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, there's the Christmas, I think it's Christmas Carol, where the ghost of Christmas Past, the three ghosts. And then Scrooge says, "Well, maybe my bad dream was just a bit of potato that was rotten, you know, and that's why I got a bad dream." So that kind of leads me to this question: is there something that we can eat or take that would increase our dreams?
Absolutely. There's something called onerogens, and that comes from the Greek onero, which is dream, and then gen, which is to create. So we get words like generate. And onerogens, and I have a chapter about onerogens in the book. And onerogens are anything, so it might be a food or a root or an herb, or it might be a practice, or I was saying earlier in the show, scent and sound are very powerful onerogens. And there's any number of onerogens that can bring on lucid dreams, that can bring on particular kinds of dreams. I have a group that's been meeting for about 11 years called the Oneronauticum, where we, and I just had one last weekend, where people from around the world, a couple thousand people from around the world, on the same night, use the same onerogen and explore what effect it has on our dreams. And a lot of traditional societies work with onerogens. So, I mean, the smell of mugwort. Everyone, mugwort is all over the world. Mugwort gives you really amazing, vivid dreams. Or, you know, something called Calea Zacatechichi, which is used by the Chantal people of Mexico and Guatemala, because they believe in dreams, you visit the realm of the spirits and it helps you bring back teachings. There's any number of onerogens that that have different effects in dream worlds.
Well, that leads me to this question then, Jennifer. Do dream catchers work?
You know, I had one over my bed for a long time. I never had much luck with it, but I know other people who have. And, you know, I mean, again, there are both lots of traditions that have different ways of working with dreams that I think are really on something. And then there's also attention. That's Blue Lotus behind you right there. That's a very powerful onerogen. Anything that channels attention and intention is going to be active in your dream world. Mm-hmm. So if having a dream catcher over your bed, what I do have over my bed is I have two paintings, Australian Aboriginal paintings. You know, they have the dream time where everything is created in the dream of the creator, and there's kind of the prototypical time, and they can pass back and forth between this shared reality and the original mythical time where to go to that space through practices. Mm-hmm. And so you see that Australian art, those paintings that were pretty popular in the 80s, that are past, they're actually maps. And I have a couple of those hanging over my bed, and I think those are pretty strong.
Well, I've always been a little worried about dream catchers, because I sort of perceive them as portals, and I don't know what's coming through there. It seems to me they're more than dreams is going to come through there, so I just got to leave that one alone. But so what about two people had the same dream?
And again, I've had that experience, with somebody with whom I was very, very close. I mean, with my best friend, and, you know, we were living together in a Dodge Omni for traveling cross country for a few months, you know, young women, you know, going out and, you know, doing mystical practices in the desert, that kind of thing that you do when you're young and excited, when you get a lot of juice. And, you know, we did eventually have the same dream one night. You know, I was talking about my dream group, the Onera Nauticum, and people participate in it for different reasons. If there's anybody who's interested in participating, by the way, you can go to urbandreamscape.com or liminaldreaming.com and sign up for the mailing list, and I'll send you when I do them, because you can do them remotely. People do them from all around the world. The only point is doing the same Onera gen at the same time. And some people who are to take part in this dream group do it because they're trying to connect to each other actually in dream spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people participate in it for all sorts of different reasons for exploring dream. And that's the thing that some people are trying to do.
Jennifer, we actually had a guest on a program who runs a sort of a dream clearinghouse. And what they're trying to do is get people to send in their dreams to sort of bring them all together, sort of like a web bot, you know, to predict the future with people are having the same dreams. They're trying to find out how many people are having the exact same dream. I mean, I had a friend of mine who had a dream on 9/11. Before 9/11 happened, he told me, that was in the, early in the morning, he was in a city where two buildings were on fire and he couldn't get through. It was a major catastrophe of some kind, and it was like an hour later, first plane hit. So sometimes information comes to us through dreams. But again, that goes to my earlier question. That seems that somebody had to send that in there. Who would that be?
You know, that's a very good question.
Unless there's some part of the...
Do you remember who it was that you had on your site, who had on your show?
No, I'd have to look it up. A couple of years ago. Yeah. Yeah, it was like a dream clearinghouse type person. Let me ask something. Of course, I think everyone's seen, as a dog lover myself, I have seen dogs dream. It's clear, and you're always assuming they're chasing a rabbit because they look like a... Now, for cat people that are watching, let me know. I don't know, do cats go meow like that in the middle of the night? Do they have those same kind of dreams? So, Jennifer, my question is, if animals dream, there's something universal about dreams, isn't there?
Absolutely, and all mammals do it. I collect videos of dreaming animals, and I mean, giraffes dream, mice dream.
Mice dream. They don't get.
What are they dreaming about? That's a good question.
Cheese.
In the womb. Fetuses in the womb are in REM most of the time.
Uh-huh.
So before you're born, dreaming.
Put Yahweh First says, what do you think about the movie Altered States?
I'm trying to remember that one.
You know, I don't... Oh, by the way, we just got a word here. People say, yes, cats dream. What about birds?
Yeah. Oh,
I want to know. I want to know these things.
Dream.
There just seems to be certain... Okay, we've got somebody else said that birds dream. Do we have any horse people out there? Do your horses dream? I'd like to know about... What do they do? Gallop in their dream there? I don't know. All right, question for you. It says, Jennifer, when I'm in a state between awake and full sleep, I see lots of visions in black and white. What's the difference between dreams and visions? I think we had that earlier, but there is this sort of place, and you mentioned it in your bio, between awake and full sleep. What if we got stuck there? Would we ever get out?
I don't, you know, I mean, I don't think you're going to get stuck there. So even though we all have the experience, it is, and even though it's, you know, brainwave experience, you know, the scientists talk about different brainwave states, right? And they talk about hypnagogia and hypnopompia as a different brainwave state. It's the weirdest one, by the way, objectively.
Oh.
Because most brainwave states, you know, it's measured by EEG, you know, so it's waves per second, you know, so, you know, like gamma, which is the highest, is like 40 waves per second. Delta, which is deep sleep, is like 0.5 to 3. Most brainwave states are marked by one particular sine wave, 0.5 to 3 or 40. Theta, which is where we have most of our sleep, where really deep meditators go, has 2, but hypnagogia and hypnopompia have 9 different sine waves that mark them. And naturally, we only mostly spend like, I don't know, 4 to 8 minutes in these states, unless we train ourselves to linger longer.
Mm. somebody says, I came out of the body on LSD, but I had a dream when I was a kid that I lost my body and stopped myself from leaving. Would I have been a vegetable person? Well, that kind of goes to my question.
Probably not. Yeah.
No, that kind of goes to my question about is it possible to get stuck in dreams? I wonder if somebody that, say, gets paralyzed or has a seizure of some kind and remains in some, like maybe even a coma, are they stuck in a dream state?
I think some of them are. Yeah, I think some of them are stuck in a dream state. And, you know, with that LSD experience, it's definitely people who have explored consciousness using, you know, things like psychedelics are, again, really people who are prime candidates for trying these liminal dream practices. You know, there are things that that people in those kinds of experiences, like, for example, having the body fall asleep before the mind does, that's an experience that people will report at the end of a psychedelic experience. That's also a liminal dream experience. I have those experiences with liminal dreams. And so it's a great way of achieving the same kind of consciousness exploration, except using something that's, you know, hangover free. It's legal. It's, you know, mm-hmm. It's endogenous. It's a great endogenous psychedelic.
Yeah, like now ayahuasca, people take that and they all seem to claim that they see spiders. And so that's sort of a universal thing. Why would somebody have the... And I remember when the bath salts came online a few years back, everybody was taking their clothes off and running down the street and they had superhuman strength. It seemed that there's a specific part of all humans that are affected by a specific drug or psychotropic drug or whatever. So as far as the spiders goes, they say that they see them, gigantic things walking up a wall, as if they do that, but we don't see them in the waking state. That sounds more like a nightmare to me. Why would anybody want to take a drug and take that risk of seeing giant spiders?
Or snakes. I think that's another ayahuasca
snakes,
phenomenon.
Yeah.
Where people see snakes. And, you know, and that really goes back again to onerogens, you know, how different ones have really specific mm-hmm. effects. You know, if ayahuasca will make you see snakes, you know, I mean, different onerogens are going to give you different kinds of experiences as well.
I was going to say, is there something out there where I can see like soft little bunnies, you know? I don't want to see snakes or spiders, okay? So whatever that is, that's why I'm never going to do ayahuasca right there, because that's going to scare the crap out of me. All right, in altered states, this is kind of a description. Altered states is based on sensory deprivation research conducted in isolation tanks under the influence of psychoactive drugs like mescaline.
Yeah, John Lilly. It's the John Lilly. I knew it. So yeah, sure. John Lilly was the guy who was using ketamine and getting into isolation tanks, mm-hmm. and going into these really intense experiences. You know, he was communicating with aliens. Mm-hmm. You know, it is how he explained part of what was happening to him. One of the most amazing things about John Lilly, actually, is he was a very early explorer of cetacean language, and in fact, he learned an enormous amount about how dolphins talk, and because, I mean, and people were, he was, his science was very lauded before he started these other kinds of experiments. And I know folks in the field of cetacean communication, and they said that the field is still, you know, that actually taking it seriously, mm-hmm. partly because of John Lilly. But John Lilly was an amazing, brilliant mind. And I mean, he was definitely exploring that space between awake and asleep.
Mm-hmm. Somebody wrote in and said, and this is a deep philosophical question again, why do people yawn after someone else does? Even my dog yawns when they see a human yawn.
You know, that actually, I once read a scientific study where they were trying to figure that out, and they failed. Nobody really knows. You know, nobody even really knows exactly why we yawn.
Yeah. I've always thought, Jennifer, that, and I've mentioned it a couple times in our conversation, that maybe dreams come from somewhere else, because when you have a dream, the organic people, non-spiritual people will say it's just fragments that are of a picture here and there on your synapse somewhere in the brain. But I'm thinking, wait a minute, somebody's got to put all those together to make a movie out of it. There's got to be a controlling factor. And that's why I keep thinking, how do we know they're not coming from the outside? Because many times I dream of something, there's something that I've never seen or felt or heard that's in the dream. So how would I use that and create part of my dream if I don't have a source?
It's a good question. And, you know, I mean, the people who say that when we're dreaming, all we're really doing is kind of connecting experiences and making a story out of them. Well, I mean, that's actually kind of what we're doing when we're awake, too. You know, I mean, what we're doing is we're taking a bunch of what are basically random experiences and making a narrative of them. So the idea that is somehow talks about that dreams, the unimportance of dreams, seems a little absurd to me.
Mm-hmm. So before I go to bed, how can I make myself dream about something? Do I just think about it and fall asleep?
Yeah, there's a lot of, yes, you can, there's a lot of methods of like kind of dream inception or of dream incubation where you're trying to like, I have an exercise for dream incubation in the book where you're trying to solve a particular problem. And you know, you can try to like make something, you know, make something to put by your bedside, you know, some sort of like totem or something that is indicative of what you're trying to, what problem you're trying to solve or what you're trying to bring into the dream. And then when you're in hypnagogia, when you're in that space where you're, you know, where your conscious mind is still online, even though you're dreaming, really try to let whatever it is you're trying to manifest seep in. Like, you know, when you drink really hot soup and you can kind of feel it in your stomach, you can lie in a particular position in sleep and try to really let what you want to bring into the dream world seep into your experience. And then you can dream. And then in the morning, when you're in hypnopompia, you get back in that same position and you know, try to go back into the dream world and see if you can remember what came through. See if you actually managed to manifest it. It's interdimensional smuggling, advanced interdimensional smuggling. I try to do it all the time.
Now, there's the expression, the answer came to me in a dream. And people have said over time, the answers to specific things came to them. They didn't think about it. It came to them. So that gets me back. I keep thinking there's something out in the universe that is sending information in and it comes to us through dreams. I don't know.
I mean, and the stories of, you know, scientists and thinkers who famously solved their problems in hypnagogia there's so many of them. I think I already mentioned Cape Coulee and the benzene ring and the periodic table. There's also Louis Agassiz, who figured out how to chip away stone to find fossils. Thomas Edison came up with a lot of his inventions in hypnagogia. I mean, the realm of, and again, I have exercises for using all of these, for doing all of these things. For actually, the practice that Edison invented is in my book. And you know, I mean, there's lots and lots and lots of stories for, you know, sleeping on it, literally, and the answers do come to you because because it's already there. It's already there, and you're unconscious, and you're kind of getting in the way of letting your own speak to you.
Is it possible to be awake and in a dream state without drugs?
Absolutely. I do it all. I do it every day. It's kind of my primary practice. No, really. And I really do. I really do love it. I mean, I use it both as a sort of a form of meditation. I use it for problem solving. I use it for creativity. I use it just because it's cool and weird and interesting in the same way that guy was using his LSD or whatever. You know, just because consciousness exploration is fascinating, I use it to explore what there is in this reality, you know, or realities or however you want to think about it. I mean, it's so the most amazing tool for exploring consciousness and experience.
Well, I love thinking about dreams. I love dreaming about dreams. Jennifer Dufford, I appreciate you coming on the broadcast tonight. Where can people get this book, Liminal Dreaming?
Anywhere you buy books. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it from your local bookstore. I mean, it's Penguin distributed it. So anywhere you buy books, you'll have it. The cheapest is Amazon. Mm.
Any final thoughts on dreams?
Humans are really hardwired to explore consciousness, to explore reality. Little kids spin in circles and roll down hills. As adults, we try to find different realities. We try to find different places in our minds. And yet we so often ignore the most easily available remarkable way of doing that, which is the dream space. And I think liminal dreaming is one of the most amazing methods you'll find for delving in to your own consciousness.
Okay, well said. All right, Jennifer Dufford, I appreciate you coming on the broadcast tonight. Can we have you on again sometime?
It would be a pleasure. This has been really fun.
All right, I appreciate you coming on the show, and this show will be uploaded on our YouTube channel here shortly. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks, mate.
All right, bye-bye.